The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening, everybody. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning. My name is Kenko. I'm a senior student at the Village Zendo. I live and practice in Northampton in Massachusetts, where today it was a warm, sunny, beautiful fall day. So, yesterday after the morning sit, Roshi Enkyo had a word for us, encouragement to practice not knowing, bearing witness, and loving action. And so I've been wondering, well, how do I practice not knowing, bearing witness, and loving action today with all that is going on? I teach mathematics and mathematics education at a university here at Westfield State University. And one of the problem-solving strategies I discovered together with my students is that if you're faced with a problem that is a really hard and difficult problem and you can't really get your hands on it, to maybe shift to an easier problem first. Not as a replacement of the real problem that you want to make sense of, but as a way of learning the landscape in the hopes of learning a little bit more that can then later on help us with the bigger problem. So I'm reminded of a teacher who once said and encouraged her students to practice with bourgeois suffering, to practice with red traffic lights, to practice with the person in front of you at the shopping, at the checkout counter, as a way of, you know, building our abilities, building our practice for moments when, you know, the shit really hits the fan. So there's a koan that came up for me in that context. It's case 43 in the Blue Cliff Record, and it's an old and well-known case. Tungshans, no cold or heat. A monk asks Tungshan, when cold and heat come, how can we avoid them? Shan said, why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat? The monk said, what is that place where there is no cold or heat? And Tungshan said, when it's cold, the cold kills you. When it's hot, the heat kills you. I don't know if you've had a chance to practice during the summer retreat a few years ago back at the Grail. You know, it's the summer, it's 93, 95 degrees, dew point in the upper 60s. And, you know, you're sitting packed together with lots of people in a room. And the sun is beating down and the windows are open, but the only thing that is coming in through the window is more hot air. You know, when the heat comes, how can we avoid it? So Tungshan says, why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat? Is that like a beach in Southern California? Or airy mountain in Colorado? Where is that place where there's no cold or heat? Well, sitting in the summer at the Grail, there's a wonderful chance to practice with that. Because at some point it's just hot. And it's just you're sitting there and you're feeling your heart beating a little bit more because your body is stressed. And you feel your hands and they're all clammy because they've been sweaty all day long. And there's this one drop of sweat that is running underneath your robe, inch by inch by inch. And then sometimes it stops, and then sometimes it gets moving again. So when cold and heat come, how can we avoid them? Well, it looks like there are a number of things that are going on at the same time for this monk who says, well, when cold and heat come, how can we avoid them? And sitting during Sesshin, there might be an opportunity, or sitting in Zazen, there might be an opportunity to untangle some of those a little bit. So there is the objective reality. It's 93, 94, 95 degrees Fahrenheit. And the dew point is in the high 60s. That's sort of the objective reality. And there's the objective reality of this body sitting and sweating, and the heart beating, and the clammy hands. But notice for the monk, there are additional layers. There's an additional layer that says, ooh, this is uncomfortable. Actually, this is very uncomfortable. And then there's the additional layer that says, oh, this really shouldn't be happening. I shouldn't really be here. They should really have fans. They really should have air conditioning. This is not really the right way to have a session. This is just terrible. And I need to get out of this. So there's the objective reality. There's my story about it, which can get pretty complicated and elaborate, as I imagine you may have experienced if you've sat on a cushion for a while. So are these multiple layers? They're sort of the objective, empirical, concrete situation, aware of our surroundings. And then there is the story land of that is subjective, that is about me, that has emotions mixed into it, that is lost in thoughts and dreams. And Tungshan says, why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat? Because even in the objective reality of 95 degrees and a dew point in the high 60s, there's still 95 degrees and a dew point in the high 60s. So one image that I recently heard from Ryodo Roshi, who's a teacher at the Zen Center of Los Angeles, was somehow the image of a wave. So what is present are the 65 degrees and the dew point in the high 60s. And then when I open up my hand and the wave comes through and takes that away, What remains? Tongshan says, when it's cold, the cold kills you. When it's hot, the heat kills you. What is the you that's washed away with the wave? And what remains? What remains is presence. And notice even the word presence is already too much. It's a place, it's a moment that feels immediate, has a sense of flowing, sense of peace. No separation between the inside and the outside. The sweat really just being water that moves, that flows from the so-called inside of the body to the so-called outside of the body. So what a wonderful place to be. And I just want to stay there forever and ever. And yet, it doesn't function. It doesn't serve. It's not engaged. It's not in relationship. So that is not the... That is the point that the teacher is pointing to right now, but that is not the final end point. That was the point that the teacher pointed the student to because the student hadn't quite seen or realized that. So it may be easy to maybe mistake the instruction as saying, oh, this is the place to be, and then everything will be fine forever and ever and ever. And that's actually when the real work begins. Because what is it like coming out of that sense of presence? Well, things are fresh and clear. Things are brand new. Things are not seen just through the lens of the story about me and the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. It's a sense that says, oh, the counting is done over here. These are the percentages. This is where the counting is still going on. And these are the protesters that are assembling outside of that center where the count is happening. Fresh and clear, brand new. And then we may notice that there's a movement to do something. And it's not clear where that wish, that insight, that idea comes from. It comes out of seeing what is present. It comes out of seeing the need for something to take place. In the language that Roshi used, the sense of presence is the not knowing, is the letting go of fixed ideas. And then the next step is bearing witness to what is present, what is fresh, what is clear, what is brand new. So let me share a little bit of the bearing witness that has been happening for me over the last week or so. At the university, we have a little weekly sit with staff and faculty once a week around lunchtime on Wednesdays. And there's usually a chance to just check in a little bit beforehand. And then we have 25 minutes of sitting, and then there are a few more minutes sharing whatever came up for folks. And for some reason, I'm not entirely sure why that is. There's many people of color that come to sit. There are many of our queer staff and faculty. And at the meeting this past Wednesday, yesterday, you know, people also mentioned that, you know, they were bullied in school. So the bullying that is going on the airwaves has been going on over the last 4 years. It's something that is very painful. Also, one of the people at the sit mentioned that they were listening to a BBC story, probably on the radio, where somebody interviewed a Trump supporter, really trying to find out, well, you know, why is it that you feel so strongly in support of President Trump? And the person, an older white man, almost choked up with feeling. And then he collected himself and said, he says the things that I've been thinking all my life. And then on Tuesday earlier this week, I collaborate with a colleague who teaches at a different school. And I visited her class and her students. And somehow the students weren't responding in the way that they usually were. So she probed a little bit. And this is a class, all students of color. And my colleague is a faculty of color, a woman of color as well. And then as she probed a little bit more, it became clear that, you know, some of the students had really been holed up in their dorm rooms because they didn't feel comfortable or safe being out and around. And they mentioned that there was a really big sign in support of Trump that went up at the gates to the campus. And the feelings that brought up for them. Bearing witness. There was also a friend who mentioned that at a meeting at a neighbor's house, they met a person from Florida who seemed to be a strong supporter of Trump. And somehow in the course of the conversation, my friend sort of realized there's nothing she can do to change this person's mind. Bearing witness. In our university, we often have a first read book, which all the first year students read, and then there are a number of classes talking across the divide. So we've been reading that, discussing it in English classes, in other classes. What is it like to talk across the divide? One of the chapters is called The Villain Side of the Story. The villain side of the story. Bearing witness. I read an article from the Stanford Center for Deliberative Democracy, where for a study they had brought together a few hundred people across the political spectrum and had them go through small group discussions, big presentations. They had politicians coming in looking at particular issues. And then in the process, they realized that as they discussed, the more extreme views tended to fall off. And what tended to remain were more mainstream ideas. And they recently did another study checking in with them, and it looked like even at this point, they were more likely to not just use one source of information, and they were less likely to just believe the information that they were reading, bearing witness. Also, one of my colleagues mentioned the flip side. So the flip side, once a day you get an email and it has a particular topic of concern of the day. And then in two columns, it has voices from the Democratic side and voices from the Republican side. And what has been helpful for me is that it's not quite as triggering to be able to read a few paragraphs to get a sense of people's thoughts and values. And disagreeing with people and think, oh, this is where I think your conclusion I don't agree with. But it's a way to learn for me. Bearing witness. And in each of those areas of bearing witness, there's a sense of, here is something I would like to do. Small things. Nothing big. Maybe something big. It just arises. So I would encourage you to find that place of not knowing and get lost in storyland and come back to not knowing and get lost again. But coming out of that presence to have a moment of looking at what is really here. What is really here if my beliefs, opinions, thoughts are quiet for a moment. And then see what comes up. And if you look at the activities at the Village Zendo, I can see that there is a lot of listening to and a lot of bearing witness and noticing ideas for actions that can be taken. Much work to do. Thank you.